Hello, everyone, and welcome to another preview show here on the Cycling Dane channel. And we are, of course, looking at the Giro d'Italia, the 106th edition of the glorious 3-week stage race that is the Grand Tour in Italy. As always, I'm joined by Mr. Gregor himself, Ewan Wilson. And Ewan, yeah, the Giro d'Italia, they're really the big one. Well, okay, the Tour de France, but the Giro, it's in many people's hearts, this one.
It is the Corsa Rosa, the first Grand Tour of the year, will always hold a special place in our hearts. It opens up Grand Tour season. From here now until the end of September, we really have a schedule packed full of exciting racing across Italy, France, and Spain. And the Giro, with its coveted Maglia Rosa and the Trofeo Sensafine, has its own sort of folklore and history unique to any other race in cycling. And this year, it's shaping up to be a big old battle of some of cycling's biggest titans.
So anyway, last year we had Jared Hindley, who isn't going to be here on the start line, but we will of course talk about his team regardless. And yeah, we're going to talk about the route, the favorites, the sprinters, and then our famous predictions, of course, as always. By me and Ewan, what awaits the riders for the 2023 Giro d'Italia route?
The 2023 Giro d'Italia will be beginning in Abruzzo, the home region of a couple of big name riders, Giulio Ciccone and Dario Cataldo, both of whom participation in this race is up in the air due to different circumstances. However, we begin this whole ordeal on the Costa dei Trabocchi over on the Adriatic coast of Italy. The race will begin with a 19.6 km long individual time trial, which does have a kicker at the end, which will make things exciting. It's about 1 or so kilometers in length at 5% average gradient. And also, this is probably one of the longest individual time trial opening stages we have seen in a while. So do make note of all that in this year's race, but it will set the scene. Stage two, however, will be a more simple affair with a sprint along the coastline, while stage three throws some hills into the action. But stage four is where we're going to have our GC battle reopened with a sort of pivotal hill stage. The Giro loves putting these in the opening week, and this will see a tough 9 km long climb at the end to Lago Lacerno. Stages five and six will take us across the country towards Naples. Those stages probably will end in a sprint before stage seven's return to Abruzzo with the Gran Sasso d'Italia, which will be our first venture above the 2,000 meters above sea level point, a crucial meter in the physiological fight for the pink jersey. The Gran Sasso d'Italia is over 20 kilometers and it has been used before, and it has also been quite pivotal in the battle for pink. Stage 7 will take us northwards after our mountain stage before stage 9, which will be our second time trial of the week. This one, another individual time trial, 35 kilometers in length, and it is pan flat around the city of Cesena. Then we have a rest day, and the second week of racing will open up with some lackluster stages, we'll say that, from stages 10, 11, and 12, which will take us across to the Tuscan coastline, moving up towards the Alps, where we will see our next GC battle on stage 13, which I flagged up as being one of the toughest stages of this Giro d'Italia, taking the riders over the Swiss borders into the Alps with the Cima Coppi at the Col du Grand Saint Bernard, followed by the Croix du Cœur. But the race will be finishing on the Swiss mountain of the Crans-Montagna, which you could say is the easiest of the three, at 13 kilometers at just 7%. This stage has over 5,000 meters of altitude gain, and it is one of the toughest days of this Giro and will be pivotal in the fight for the Trofeo Sensafine. The day after, the Giro organizers have been a little bit fair, and they've given them a bit of a rest down from the Alps into valley land before stage 15's kind of interesting stage. It's rolling through Giro di Lombardia region, ending in Bergamo with a couple of sort of category two hills on the agenda. It's very similar to a stage we had back in 2017 that Bob Jungels won in a reduced sprint between the GC favorites. This similar kind of thing could happen here. But from there, we will have another rest day. Then the real meat of this GC battle, the final week of racing, will begin, and it all kicks off in Sabbio Chiese, where we will start stage 16, a really, really tough mountain stage with 5,200 meters of altitude gain throughout the day. It looks like it's sort of a saw. There's so many hills to overcome, category one, category three, category two, and the final finish to Monte Bordone is another category one climb. It is steep, it is difficult, it's 20 kilometers in length, and it will ramp up into the double digits at points. But stage 17 will then offer the riders a bit of a rest. It's our token Giro final week sprint stage. They always throw one in there. Sometimes it goes to the breakaway, sometimes it goes to the peloton, and this year it will end in Carole. Stage 18, however, will bring the riders back to the mountains. much to the sprinters' unhappiness. We'll start in Oderzo and head up to Val di Zoldo, which is another sort of difficult Dolomite day. The finish will remind some viewers of the Perigord climb, two steps where we have a difficult climb to begin with, a short descent, then a steep finale. It's quite similar to that finish where we saw Pogacar beat Vingegaard in the final week of racing at last year's Tour de France. And it also could be a little bit of a sort of softer GC battle before the real ruptures on stage 19, the final competitive road stage of the Giro d'Italia. We'll get onto why in a bit. But it will begin in Longarone and head up to Tre Cime di Lavaredo, where we finish in the past. This is where Nibali and Giovanni Visconti took glory back in 2013 on that very snowy day in that year's Giro d'Italia. This year, well, it's a similar profile. Many sort of Dolomite mountains you will know and heard of, including the Passo Giao, which was used in the 2021 Giro d'Italia, where Egan Bernal made his big move for pink. We'll dive down into Cortina d'Ampezzo, host city of the Winter Olympics 2026, before we kick up to the final kickers to Tre Cime di Lavaredo. It's tough. It's sort of another sort of staircase climb where we have different levels, different gradients. It gets very steep towards the end, and with the altitude, it will get tough. We are at 2,300 meters above sea level at our finishing line. But that's not where the mountains are done. No, no, no. We have a mountain time trial. We'll begin in Tarvisio, head up to Monte Lusari. This is no sort of easy mountain time trial, though. This mountain is tough, difficult, hellish, you could say. It is 8 kilometers at an average of 12% gradient, very similar looking to La Planche des Belfis. This whole stage, in fact, looks very similar to stage 20 of the 2020 Tour de France. We all know that stage. We know how that one happened. Pogacar won the stage. Roglic crumbled on the Vosges Mountains. Here, just in front of the Slovenian border, we have another chance for a big mountain TT upset on what will be one of the toughest climbs of the Giro d'Italia, and it will be never-ending for our GC contenders. But once that mountain's done, they can breathe a sigh of relief, and they will head onto a plane and travel over to Rome, the capital of the Catholic world, and we will move around Rome for a sprint stage. We don't usually come to the Italian capital for the final stage of the Giro. It's not really a part of the world known for its cycling ability, or really known for Gazzetta dello Sport, but we will finish there with what will probably be a sprint stage. So all in all, this Giro d'Italia offers 5 summit finishes, 6 if you count the mountain time trial, a number of sprint opportunities for our sprinters, 3 time trials, one of which is that mountain time trial, and in total, if you are a statistician, it is 3,489 kilometers in total length of the whole 3 weeks of the Giro 2023.
Thank you for that, Ewan. It certainly is a very diverse Giro d'Italia this year. Not any Gran Partenza as we're used to outside of the borders, which is a shame. Don't worry, I'm sure South Korea is coming soon. But who knows? Or Japan. But we might as well crack on with it. No Jide Hindley, as we said, unfortunately. So we won't have our first back-to-back winner since Miguel Indurain. Yeah, that's a crazy stat. But we might as well start with Bora Hansgrohe because they're sending their other big GC star in the form of Alexander Vlasov. And you and Bora Hansgrohe, you always have a good word about them.
Well, I'm always very confident about Sasha Vlasov, the cyborg from Vyborg, as he's known to some. He's been incredibly reliable over the past 12 months, particularly in 2022, at just churning out really solid GC results. Last year, he won one big UCI World Tour stage race and probably should have won the Tour de Suisse as well if it went for his COVID positive test just a day or two before the final of that race. This year, however, it's a bit of a different story. We're not quite seeing the same Sasha Vlasov. He's missing the mark on a number of occasions. At the beginning of the year in Valencia, he finished in top 5. That's a race he won last year. Then going into Tirreno Adriatico, he finished in top 10. And then Tour of the Alps, he was in top 10, but not really lighting up the GC. He was looking good on some mountain stages, but was missing that mark overall. And he eventually left that race to go to Liège-Bastogne-Liège, a race he performed very well at in 2022, and he finished in 46th position. So I'm a little bit underwhelmed with Vlasov's performances this year, but his Grand Tour record does speak loud. Every Grand Tour he's finished inside top 10, two of the three, were inside top 5 at the Giro 2021 and at last year's Tour de France, despite crashing in last year's Tour de France on the stage into Longwy. He is normally a very reliable rider. I'm adding those caveats for this year, but he also has an incredibly strong team around him. I would say one of the strongest teams in this year's Giro d'Italia. We have Leonard Kemna, who might or might not be going for GC. We've seen glimpses of it this year that he might be going for GC, but really, at Grand Tour, they should be putting their eggs in the Vlasov basket, but Kemna will be a very useful teammate. We saw that last year. on the final mountain stage, where he sort of put the nails in Katapath's coffin and gave Jai Hindley the yellow brick road, or the pink brick road, if you will, to the victory and to the pink jersey. Also here we have Fabro, Aliotti, Pat Conrad, who finished in top 10 at Liège last weekend, as well as Nico Denz, who's looking quite good in Romandy at the moment. So I'm very confident on Bora Hansgrohe. They've shown tactical prowess and tactical maturity. There are a couple of stages at this year's Giro where they could outplay the others. Where we see Jumbo Visma, they're a little bit rigid in their tactics. Soudal, they're a bit of mavericks at the Grand Tour. But Bora Hansgrohe, after last year, they showed that they're a little bit sort of malleable on the ball and tactically cunning. They could use that to their advantage this year to topple the two big favorites, Roglic and Evenepoel.
Jumping the gun. But I mean, yeah, Bora Hansgrohe, Wilco Kelderman, obviously they don't have him anymore. They don't have Jai Hindley in this team either. You said it as well. Lazov not been looking great. And yeah, even at Tirreno, where he finished ninth, Leonard Kemna was ahead of him in fourth place. So question marks definitely for Bora. But we only picked them first because they were champions last year. But we might as well go to one of the big favorites. Who should we go for? Yeah, we might as well go for the world champion, Remco Evenepoel. He's absolutely flying. And the defending Vuelta a España champion, winning Liège-Bastogne-Liège back-to-back as well last weekend. And you and Remco Evenepoel and Soudal Quickstep, is this going to be the first time they're going to win the Giro d'Italia?
Well, wind back the clocks 2 years ago, we had very similar discussions, but with very different contexts.
Unfair.
Yeah, it is. But for Remco Evenepoel, I feel like this year, really, everything is lining up for him. We've never seen Evenepoel have this sort of a build-up as convincing as this. Last year's Vuelta, we were missing the mark. Yes, he won Lombardia and he won San Sebastian, but his performances in stage races last year was very lackluster up until he won the Vuelta a España. This year, his performances in UCI World Tour level stage races is looking very good. A win at UAE Tour, also a second place at Catalonia with stage wins along the way. And now with this big win at Liège-Bastogne-Liège, he has momentum in his ballpark. And the momentum at the Giro can carry on here with the opening TT, with that little sort of kicker at the end. That would really suit Evenepoel on paper. It will as well for Roglic. But Evenepoel, we would say, is probably the more proven time trialist, a bronze medalist at last year's World Championships, let's not overlook. If he gets the pink jersey that early on, I think it's all about riding conservatively, which he did very well last year at the Vuelta a España. Once he got that red jersey, he was very conservative in the mountains and put in the efforts he needed to sort of gain a nice buffer so he could be comfortable in the rest of the race. And I think there's a real possibility that he gets pink from start to finish this year, and he sort of rides this Giro out quite comfortably if he sort of gains the time that we expect him to in the opening time trial and on stage 9's time trial, which should really pave a pink brick road, if I use that metaphor again, towards sort of being in the pole position for the rest of the race. His team, however, they've been looking good. I will say that Louis Vodavaka looked very good at both Liège and at Flèche Wallonne. Ilan Van Wilder has been looking fantastic this year, looked great at the Vuelta last year as well. Peter Seri is a brilliant guy with a lot of experience, as is Dries Deveneens and Mattia Cattaneo as well. Factor in Fausto Masnada, who worked with him at the cursed 2021 Giro. I think it's a strong formation. I don't know whether they still have that maverick nature that they had at last year's Vuelta España. They've been looking better this year as a formation in the mountains, but will they be able to sort of control this from start to finish? It'll be hard, especially when we have a really good looking Jumbo squad, a really good looking Ineos and Bora Hansgrohe. It will make it hard to control. Do they have the firepower to do so? I'm not 100% convinced, but I think Evenepoel on his own probably has a strong enough position to be there. Thinking about that final week in those really difficult mountain stages, yes, Evenepoel is good enough to be there, but it would be very nice to have a top-level mountain teammate by his side once we go down to the final 10 rider selection that we're going to have on stages 18, 19, even stage 13. Who's going to be that guy for Soudal? Would it be Mattia Cattaneo, who almost finished in top 10 of the Tour de France a couple of years back? Will it be Masnada? Will it be Van Wilder? I don't know. I'm not quite convinced by those guys.
Yeah, we'll see if he can do the impossible. We haven't had a Belgian winner in the Giro d'Italia for a very long time. And Ewan, you can try and guess who it is.
The last Grand Tour winner before Evenepoel was a Giro winner. I can't remember his name. Skippers?
De Moeken.
Oh, yeah. De Moeken, yeah.
1978. So, I mean, he has a score to settle.
I remember the discourse from 2021.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, it is very different circumstances. But we might as well move on, because his biggest rival, we think, is potentially going to be Primoz Roglic, who got the better of him at the Vuelta Catalunya. And I mean, He has a very strong team around him as well. They're the only team who confirmed the team lineup as well. So, I mean, Ewan, I mean, Tobias Voss is coming here as well, the world champion for the time trial. He's been showing good form in the Tour de Romandy. But yeah, how do you see their chances going?
I think they've got a very good chance here. Roglic is a very reliable stage racer. Grand Tour rider? Question mark, question mark. But as a stage racer, he is fantastic at what he does. He climbs at the best, time trials at the best. On a hilly stage as well, he can just sort of sprint and get those bonus seconds where he needs to. And he's proved that this year with two big UCI World Tour stage race victories at Tirreno Adriatico and Catalunya, beating out a number of these big favorites that we're talking about, the likes of Almeida, Gegen Hart, Evenepoel, Sasha Vlasov. He's the only person here who's beaten all of them at World Tour stage races this year, which is very impressive. He has those bragging rights. So I give that to him. He's definitely looking strong this year so far. But I mean, with Roglic, we always have to sort of put a bit of a caveat on the fact that he can be crash prone. He's accident prone. Even the last time he rode the Giro, he was in pink until the final week, and he crashed in the final week of racing and lost the pink jersey to Carapaz when he was sort of snoozing on one of the mountain stages. Yes, it's a very different Roglic, a very different Jumbo-Visma now, but we sort of have to add these caveats, even the fact that he hasn't finished the last two Grand Tours that he started. But this course looks very Roglified, potentially. There are a couple of stages where we could see Roglic sort of gain bonus seconds, really looking towards that Gran Sasso d'Italia stage, where usually in the first week of racing, mountain stages aren't sort of big sort of minute gap affairs. They're usually smaller groups. We've seen that in the past as well. Last year at Blockhouse at the Giro, thinking as well back to the Tour de France in 2020 at Ossia-Melet, stage one by Roglic. Roglic could sprint at the end, win the stage, gain bonus seconds, and slowly chip away at Evenepoel. And I think he does sort of, he can read Evenepoel very well. They rode very entertainingly at the Volta Catalunya the other week. And it sort of gave glimpses that Roglic is one of the few riders in the world who can sort of read Evenepoel and ride with him on his own level. So it does point towards exciting racing here. I just think that Roglic will not be on the same TT level as Evenepoel. And there's an awful lot of flat time trial kilometers here. And hopefully we don't see a repeat of the 2020 Tour de France time trial affair on this year's stage 20 of the Giro, which looks incredibly similar in terms of its profile. Nevertheless, the team, Scott, this team is fantastic. It's Jumbo-Visma. It's what we expect from this formation. We've already seen a really, really strong-looking Entratnik. We've seen glimpses of a good, solid-looking Tobias Foss as well, who's also Sepp Kuss, who's Roglic's right-hand man. You also have Robert Hasing with all of his knowledge. Koen Bouwman, who's a bit fiery. He was last year's Mali Azzurra, as well as Edoardo Affini, to keep them measured on the flat. It's a really strong formation. It's Jumbo. They're well-drilled. I believe that they're a really strong alternative to Soudal Quickstep to really control these mountain stages, where in Soudal, I don't see someone being there in that tight selection. We have the final 10 riders on a mountain stage. I think Evenepoel will be in his own. I don't think Roglic will be in his own. I think he'll have Kuss or one of these other guys by his side. And I think that's what's going to make a really big difference in that final week of racing once it comes down to Roglic versus Evenepoel.
Despite that not finishing record, I mean, he's been the king of the Vuelta a España in the last couple of years, except for last year, obviously. But yeah, we might as well move on. Roglic, Remco, it's going to be a very exciting rivalry. Also on the video, last time he was at the Giro, I actually met Roglic, so I'll put a link to that as well. But nevertheless, Ineos Grenadiers, and this is one team that is certainly very exciting. They're coming with previous champion, the 2020 champion and recent winner of the Tour of the Alps, but also Geraint Thomas, podium finisher last year. And what do you think of this team? Filippo Ganna returning to the Giro as well.
Well, Ineos are one of the few teams coming here with a former winner of this race, which is surprising for the Giro, in fact. But Theo Gegenhardt has been looking really good this year. A little bit under the radar, you could say, because he's not one of these sort of top tier names, but he has podiumed and won some quite big stage races. He won the Tour of the Alps the other week. He finished in third place at Tirreno Adriatico, a World Tour level race with Roglic and some of these other big favorites. And he finished third at Valencia. He has not finished outside top 10 of a stage race he has started this year. I've never seen Theo Gegenhardt look as good as this. He's also sort of been showing signs that he's been improving his sprint, his sort of hillier ability to sort of be there on these rolling days, which he'll need when he's riding against the likes of Roglic and Evenepoel, who have both won Liège-Bastogne-Liège, a hilly monument, in the past. I'm pretty confident in Theo Gegenhardt and at least his chance to get a top five. However, the time trialing kilometers, I don't think sort of screams Theo Gegenhardt. He's not the most reliable time trial engine, would you say?
No, I mean, he's only done one time trial this year, the Tirreno-Adriatico one, fairly flat. Yeah, losing 52 seconds to the likes of Ghana, obviously, but like also losing a lot of time to Brendan McNulty, Tieren Arendsman, João Almeida, probably a bit more important, and losing time to Roglic, but not actually as much as you would have thought.
Yeah, I mean, I think that sort of reinstates the point here that a lot of these top tier guys coming here, Evenepoel, Roglic, even Sascha Vlasov to some extent, are much stronger time trialists than Theo Gegenhardt. And 55 kilometers roughly of flat time trialing at this year's Giro, that's a lot of kilometers against the clock against some of these big contenders who, I mean, Evenepoel is going to gain a couple minutes on Theo Gegenhardt purely in the time trials. And I don't think we can sort of read too much into the 2020 COVID Giro when everyone's form was all over the place. It was a surprise Theo Gegenhardt and Hindley were really there competing in the final week. There were big gaps. It was very unpredictable. I don't think we can sort of expect Theo Gegenhardt to ride away from everyone in the final week this year like he did before. So it leaves him with a limited amount of stages to really gain back time on Roglic and Evenepoel. And I don't know if he's a stronger climber than those other guys to sort of place him in the winning position, because you need to be better than both Roglic and Evenepoel in order to win this race, especially with the amount of time that they're going to gain on the time trials. But looking at his team, it's really strong again. Ineos Grenadiers, they never fail to field a really good Grand Tour squad. And they also have a couple of other cards. I mean, rewind the clock a couple months back, and we were saying Geraint Thomas was going to be their favorite. He has not been looking very good this year. He's not finished in top 10 at any race this year so far. I don't expect that to change, but he could be a really sort of useful card and a useful teammate to use. Well, on these kind of mountain stages and these rolling stages, he's been there, he's done that. He's competed at the top level at Grand Tours. Also in this lineup, we have Pavel Sivakov. He's been looking really good in the moment, as has Laurens de Plus. He's finally back. It's great to see, as well as Damon Adamsman, who rode a really decent final week of the Giro last year and a very, very solid Vuelta a España in 2022, along with the experienced engines of Luke Rowe and Salvatore Puccio. I mean, it's good. It's quite similar in terms of balance to the 2021 team that Ineos brought, and they were really solid throughout that race. So I'm expecting big things from Ineos. I think we're going to see a return of the SkyTrain all over the Giro d'Italia. We're going to turn back the clock to the 2010s, and it's going to be a decent result for Ineos. Probably a top five.
Probably not going to be too happy about that prediction, but I mean, moving on, I think one rider that we haven't spoken about, well, we mentioned him in passing, UAE Emirates, they're coming with João Almeida, who unfortunately missed out on the podium because of COVID. He could have feasibly gotten a podium last year, not the strongest squad around him, but you and they're also bringing Jay Vine, their new signing, and a very Italian squad here.
They usually have a bit of a focus on the Giro as well. I know Pogacar's their Tour de France headline, but this is still a very good team. And Almeida, their sort of front man, has been sort of quietly chipping away at the 2023 season so far, up there in a number of big races. In the Algarve, he was in top 10 there. Tirreno-Adriatico finished in second place overall, and at Catalunya, finished in third place behind Roglic and Evenepoel. Although I don't think Almeida is above Roglic and Evenepoel, bit like Wout Gegenhardt, I think he's definitely in the fight for a podium position or a top five at least. Almeida is very reliable at Grand Tour racing. That sort of fourth to sixth place position is where Almeida sits year on year. In 2020, Giro d'Italia finished in fourth. In 2021, finished in top 10. Also at the Vuelta as well, finishing in top 10 last year, even when he wasn't the sort of front man for UAE. It's definitely pointing towards a top 10. I don't think this trend is going to be bucked this year. And also with the time trialing kilometers, you would say it favors Almeida, but his TT performances since signing for UAE are not quite as reliable as they were when he was riding for the Koenig Quickstep back in 2021 and 2020. So I do take that with a little bit of a pinch of salt, if you will. But Almeida for me is definitely a sort of reliable card to play. The team, not quite as strong as the others, but Jay Vine brings something different in the mountains, as does the Rocha himself, Davide Formolo. They're guys who could sort of be there and be sort of pivotal in the sort of intermediate towards the latter part of some of these difficult mountain stages in the Dolomites and the Alps in the final week of racing.
I mean, before we go into the sprinters, just some other riders, outsiders of note. We've got EF Education, EasyPost coming with a very interesting team. Uran, Hugh Carthy, who was second in a Tour of the Alps. Ben Healy as well, who we talked up a lot in the classic season as well with his heroics there. But Bahrain Victorious, we could have put them in the favorite section, but they haven't really been performing well in terms of Caruso. Maeda's been top five in Paris-Nice, but Jack Haig a bit under the weather in terms of their former standards in the Vuelta a España, for instance. And Giulio Ciccone as well could potentially also be teasing the top 10. So anyway, Ian, we can't just talk about the favorites, the outsiders, but also, it is a very sprint heavy Grand Tour as normal. But I mean, what are you kind of looking towards? Mats Pedersen's coming to the Giro d'Italia for Trek Segafredo. We've got an Australian you quite like as well. You talked him up earlier this season as well. We've got Mark Cavendish returning to the Giro. There's plenty of places to look to.
Yeah, there is. There's quite a lot of interesting sprinters here. People you wouldn't expect to be on the start line of a Giro. And that takes me towards Mats Pedersen, who's had a really solid year so far, but with a big focus on the classics. Rode a brilliant sort of campaign early this year at Roubaix, Ronde, and so forth. But did he sort of peak too early? I know he wanted to ride that form into the Giro. It doesn't necessarily work for classics riders where they do the classics, then go into the Giro and they can guard that form. We saw it work for Binnie and Van der Poel last year. I'm not 100% convinced it will work for Mats Pedersen, but there are plenty of stages that could suit him. In particular, if he wants to win one stage, stage 10 is perfect for him. It's a bit of a hill. You can get rid of your Cavendishes, your Caden Groves, your whoever's, and leave Pedersen right there all the way to the end. And similar to Van der Poel and Binnie last year, Pedersen can try to win a stage in sort of a classics format. He's got that race savviness that most sprinters don't really have. But I mean, I don't think we're going to have sort of a sprinting hegemon. There's no rider on the start list who screams sort of four stage wins. Although I think Pedersen's a really good sprinter and he was the sprinting hegemon of last year's Vuelta a España, I don't quite know if he's going to be in that position again this year at the Giro. It's a very different sort of kettle of fish. The Vuelta usually has sort of B stroke C tier list sprinters, where the Giro is it's usually a stronger start list, and some sprinters will treat this as their number one goal for the year. So I think it's going to be interesting in the sprinting field.
Yeah, by the looks of it, Caden Groves is licking his lips over this the rival field here, potentially.
He's got a really good team as well around him. Oscar Riesebeek, Aldani, Cinkeldam, Spiralli. It's a really, really good leadout train. You would say probably the strongest leadout train we have. It definitely looks good for him. But Scott, I don't want to overlook
Mark Cavendish.
Fernando Gaviria.
Do you think he's actually back to, well, not Gaviria 2017, but...
But there is actually a nod to 2017 in here. One of his most dominant sprinting performances in his whole career, one of the most spectacular stages, was a stage into Tortona. We revisit Tortona in the second week of racing at this year's Giro. He'll have good memories of that city. I know he's Gaviria, and it's so hit or miss, but at the beginning of the season, I really thought we were getting prime Gaviria back. I would not be against a Fernando Gaviria renaissance here at the Giro.
But, I mean, Quickstep are completely out of it because they're obviously going for the Giro, well, the top honours here. Normally a team where we see them come with Kittel, they came with Gaviria, Cavendish, etc. to just sweep up a lot of these sprinting stages, but they're out of the equation.
They are. I mean, Pascal Ackermann is here as well. He won the Maledetto Camino in 2019. He's riding for UAE, we believe, in May. The uncertainty there is on whether he'll ride the Giro, not the team he's riding for. We know he's on a contract with UAE. Let that be known. But, I mean, it does leave it wide open. I'm not sure whether we'll have some sort of people jump across to the Giro last minute. If so, I mean, I'd love to see a Hedepa Tayson or sort of Sam Welsford really anchor one of these smaller teams that might not get the success they're looking for in the GC game, just to sort of provide texture and depth to our sprinting collective, because we have a number of sprinting stages. I think it'll be really interesting to sort of have an open field because we're lacking a Philipsen, a sort of Hunebeke, Jakobsen, like these guys who seem like they're streets ahead of everyone else in the sprinting game.
But anyways, with that, enough talk about sprinters. Now we come to the favorite part of our show, and that is our predictions. Of course, we're going to do the top three and all the different jerseys. But Ewan, we might as well start with the Mansus jersey, because that was the one Koen Bouwman won last year.
Well, the Mountains jersey is always the hardest one to predict. Every year we seem to trip up on it. And this year, I feel like it's going to be similarly quite hard to predict. It'll be Gino Meder. I think he'll get it.
That could work. Yeah, you're right. It's a very hard one to predict completely. And I'm going to say Astana are going to throw everything into this, and Harold Tejada is going to win it. Now coming to the points classification jersey.
Okay, so the Giro have weighted this one so that it will be won by a sprinter, probably, instead of a climber. They have taken that Tour de France approach in recent years. So sorry, Roglic and Remco, you are not in contention. Instead, I'm going to say it goes to Payson Groves, Payson Groves. I have a feeling you're going to pick Mas Payson. So for the sake of difference, I will pick Caden Groves.
Yeah, I could have picked Magnus Cornelissen as well, but yeah, Mads Pedersen, why not? Are we gonna go for youth jersey? Nah, top three.
I mean,
What should we? Yeah,
that one I
Remco.
think we're going to understand once we get to the podium, given that one of our contenders is white jersey eligible. And I think you all know who we're inferring here.
Roglic, no. Who's your top three?
Okay, so the Giro d'Italia, I think third place is going to be really open. The top two favorites, I think, just are in a different sort of stratosphere. They will be going on their own tête-à-tête. I'll get to them in a sec. But I think third place will be open between Sacha Vlasov, Theo Gegenhardt, and João Almeida. I think they're going to be in the in-between, sort of motoring around, trying to sort of battle out for the bronze medal. And in that case, I'm going to go for Theo Gegenhardt. He's on really good form. He's on a good team. Yes, his TT is not great, but I feel like he'll pick one out of the bag. He'll pull one out of the bag, as they say. And I think he's going to be there in the mountains. On one of these mountain stages, he'll be able to follow Remco and Roglic, spoilers, and gain enough time on Joao and Sasha to sort of find his way onto the podium. Plus, it's Ineos Grenadiers, and anything that isn't a podium at a Grand Tour is a bit of a disappointment for them. So they have uber high standards. And then second and first place. Okay. Second place goes to Primož Roglič. I like Primož. I think this is a really good Jumbo squad. I'm not 100% sure he has it in him to just overcome Remco because Remco's just looked so superior so far this year in terms of Liège and also UAE Tour. He was good there, but he has showed sort of cracks in his armor. So the winner for me is Remco, but I think it's going to be really close and it will come down to that mountain time trial once again. I'm not going to predict it's going to be the same thing where Roglic is in pink and he's pale faced and his helmet goes all the way up there and Remco wins the stage by 2 minutes. But I think it's going to be a really, really good Giro. I have good vibes about this year's Corsa Rosa.
I was going to pick Remco as the winner because of the whole world championship, but I won't do that now. Now I'm going to, you've thrown me completely, so I'm just going to go crazy now. Barcamolimo winner? No, not that crazy.
That would be something. I am so here for this.
Okay, I'm going to say we are going to have João Almeida in third place, Hugh Carthy in second place, and the winner is going to be Alexander Blazov.
Oh, you've been radicalized
Yeah,
to the
exactly.
Sacha Vlasov hype train.
Well, it's
Oh,
just
and
you pick the one that makes most sense, so I have to go for a crazy one. All
that's
in.
fair.
But anyway, with that's it for our Giro d'Italia preview show. And make sure to comment down below if you have a better prediction than me as well. And hit the like button, subscribe to the channel, and we will of course have our stage previews of every single stage of the Giro and also our streams as well. So make sure to tune in for that. And as always, thank you very much for watching and have a nice day.